Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay, the word is out. They're gonna talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know, from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned you. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 765, Five Naps at Freddy's.
I felt like
only five?
One. Well, I was trying to be
You did
kind.
Better than I did.
This is the kinder, gentler Tom.
Yeah.
So, once again, I am on the road traveling. We drove to Kansas City to see Pink.
Oh, that's fun. How was that?
Yeah. It was great. She puts on a great show.
Does she hang from the ceiling and do flips and
multiple times? Multiple times.
Oh, dang.
It's funny. At one point in the show, somebody offered her a beer, and she's like, no, I have to be upside down in a minute.
Yeah. Nice.
Oh, weird. I thought she was sober. I guess not.
Oh, I don't know. I have no idea.
Joke, too.
I think she is.
I could be wrong about that, but I think that she is.
That's a good line, though.
It is a good line, yeah. It's better than I have an addiction issue and I don't wish to share.
Yeah, also, can you? I'd like to
also
not break my sobriety.
Not hand me random things to put in my body. Right.
Yeah, like that's how people get COVID.
Just COVID. I think everything else
and cooties
and cooties. Cooties nobody mainly, wants yes. cooties. Did she have? You know, didn't I see that she brought? Didn't like Alanis Morissette like do a? She was doing a cover. Pink was doing a cover of You Ought to Know, and then Alanis Morissette walked on stage.
Oh,
and they did it together.
I don't think you get that kind of stuff in Kansas City.
That's probably true.
That's
more of like an LA.
LA, yeah, like
that's
Kansas
New York,
City.
Maybe.
The Bowl.
Chicago.
Whatever.
Yeah. In Kansas City, we're like, it's the bass player from REO Speedwagon.
Yeah.
Not the original one.
No,
one that took over in the late 90s.
Ladies and gentlemen, Led Zeppelin. But it's not Led Zeppelin. It's just, you know. I remember when they opened like Planet Hollywood here in St. Louis.
Yeah.
And the running gag is like, they're not going to get like Corey Feldman. They're going to get like Corey Feldman's cousin to come down and be like, it's the new Planet Hollywood.
We got the real guys for our grand opening. We got Sylvester Stallone and Bruce Willis. Do we get Schwarzenegger?
I think we did.
I know we got Bruce Willis and Stallone. And
we
John
got his
Goodman
jacket
showed
from
up.
T2.
Yeah. But
that's what I realized when I was 18 that I had bigger hands than Arnold Schwarzenegger. Because they have like, you know, they got their hand molds in the wall or whatever, and I put my hand up there. I was like, God dang, he's got tiny little hands.
Thanks to the Terminator in HD, I know I got something else bigger than Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Hey now.
You can see all the reflections in the bar all the glasses.
Yeah. I remember right after our Planet Hollywood opened, which is no longer open, the T burned out. And I was just like, that's so St.
Really?
Louis. We get a plain Hollywood. Everybody else gets a planet. We get
plain Hollywood.
Just plain old Hollywood.
Plain old Hollywood.
So anyway.
Spelling checks out, too, for Missouri school districts.
Absolutely. Oh. Yeah.
Not my kids.
So anyway, that's why we will go around the virtual table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. And before we dig in, don't forget shameless plugs. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, iHeart, whatever they're calling Google this these days, Spotify. While you're there, be sure and follow us so you never miss an episode. Maybe leave us a review. It's super helpful. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. We're hoping that you will share an episode. That's why we call the group the League of Show Sharers. And people who were kind enough to share an episode last week include Chris Valls, Librarian Cynthia, Ralph Tribble, Chris Magic Man, Tammy Lynn Powers Betts, Travis Tewitt, Julianne Jordan, Gus Butisi, and Joe shared
another,
it.
Again, another episode that I wasn't on.
But he shared it in the last 6 hours so he could get included on the League of Show Sharers, sneaking in.
I wanted to make sure that I didn't forget.
Taking advantage of the Brad Hyen rule.
I did.
Gabriel Lugo, Tom Dowdy, Richard Kratzer, Phil Timon, Taylor Ward, Brent Smith, Heather Sachs, David Rojas, Spoiler Piece Theater, Mike and Oscar, Invasion of the Remake, In Session Film, Feel and Film, Ronnie Castle, Geek to Me Radio, NostalgiaCast, Dissect That Film, Ion International Film Festival, which sounds very fancy.
Hey!
Matt Naglia, The Real Pete, The Film Bee, and Binge Movies. So thank you very much. We greatly appreciate it. And don't forget, we have a Patreon where for $5 a month you get all sorts of bonus content, and we like you extra. So,
yeah, and in time, well, for spooky time, if you subscribe to the Patreon, if you go back, I actually did a breakdown of all of the Halloween timelines, and there is also an interview with Dustin McNeil, who co-wrote two books. Like, one is a massive Halloween Bible that's like a breakdown of like production and all kinds of stuff from the original, I think, up until 2018. I don't think they've updated it with the two new ones. But there's also, they did a second book of all of the unused but written Halloween sequel ideas, and they're all there. And so Dustin McNeil and his co-writer, he and I chatted for a bit about, you know, things that almost got made, like Michael Myers versus Pinhead, which was a thing that almost happened coming off the success of Freddy versus Jason. Halloween the Musical, that's right. A Quentin Tarantino written Halloween 6 that he wrote a treatment for.
So this would have been before Quentin Tarantino was a name.
It was post-Reservoir Dogs, but pre-Pulp Fiction.
Okay.
So he had written True Romance. I think he'd written Natural Born Killers. But Pulp Fiction hadn't hit yet. So it's like right in that, where if they could have gotten him, that was the point where they could have gotten him.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of crazy script ideas. A kaiju Michael Myers at one point was tossed around. It's crazy. But if you haven't subscribed, check those out, because that's all on there.
Awesome. So I guess let's dig in, shall we?
I can't believe how much money this thing has made.
I can, but it's right in the wheelhouse for my stepdaughter. She's loved this movie or this game. She's loved this game so long that there was no licensed stuff to purchase. Like,
When did that happen?
I mean, what, 2010? I guess 2000.
Is it really that old?
The game was released in August of 2014. So, still. I remember.
You were right. There was nothing to purchase in 2010.
That is also true.
That's true.
But like, I remember going to like a Wizard World, thinking, "Oh, we can find some stuff there for her." And the only stuff we could find was like fan made by artists, and this guy was selling it like crazy because nobody else had made anything yet, and there was nothing real you could buy. I mean, I even remember buying her a Five Nights at Freddy's like book, like the novelization, and it was literally something some guy just wrote and printed at home. Like, he's probably in jail now, like for copyright infringement. But when we got it, it was decently made, but it was clearly, I could just tell, like, this was one of those like self-publish your own book kind
of thing.
And they have tons of real books now.
Yeah, like, it's like there was nothing out there except the game for the longest time. And so she was super excited. We went and took her and two of her friends, and from what I can gather, if you like the game, this movie is doing all the things you want. And if you don't like the if you are not familiar with the game, it is it is kind of, like, so it's kind of proof that fan service does not a film make, right?
Yeah,
like,
that's fair. Like, yeah, right.
And so this movie is, from what I can gather, nothing but fan service. Because she was, like, going through all the Easter eggs, and I was like, okay, but, like, here's the thought. What if there had been a story?
Yeah.
You know, it's a weird story. It's
a very weird story. And saying there's no story is a bit harsh. There is a story, but what if there had been a good story?
Well, the problem is you don't get the story you want. They tried. I mean, okay, this is a movie about killer animatronic robots, and they tried to do this feel-good, you know,
I don't know if it's feel-good. It's like
trauma.
Feel like shit.
Yeah, but, you know, over a family, and you got to stick together and do all this stuff. And it's like, no.
But they don't stick together because he can't keep an eye on his goddamn brother.
Well, it's not his job. That's the parents' job.
I guess that's true.
But here's the thing. So everything you're saying, there was a movie that did this better than this movie did itself, and it's called Willy's Wonderland.
I was wondering if you were going to bring that up with Nicolas Cage.
It's not beholden to a bunch of backstory and Easter eggs. Willy's Wonderland is a riff on Five Nights at Freddy's, and it is a blast. It's so fun.
And I don't think he – does he have like a line of any dialogue?
I don't think he has any dialogue. I really don't think he does. It's just kick ass. It's about a guy that his car breaks down. In order to repair it, the guy wants him to go and be a janitor at Willy's Wonderland, which is the, you know, same idea as Freddy Fazbear's, and all the animatronics come to life, and these kids sneak in, and they're killing the kids, and he has to fight the robots, and it's so freaking fun. And again, it's not like they have to pack 150 Easter eggs into the movie. It's just a guy kicking ass. And this movie is beholden to the Easter eggs so much that if you don't know the games like I don't, you can't help but to check out. There's nothing in there for you.
Yeah. I don't think Josh
Hutcherson. He's great.
But he doesn't talk for the first, I don't know,
which is fine, 40
minutes.
I think he's a great actor, and I think this is a crappy script. And
I did try to look stuff up because I kind of felt the same way, but at the same time, it's like, is this wasn't made for me, right? Like, this is for, you know, the people who played the game, or the, you know, I was on the fence if this was like gateway horror, like if this is like the next step.
Well, Joe, you'd have to have horror in the movie for it to be.
Yeah, you get some pretty lackluster jump scares. Well, sort of.
Do you know anything about the game?
I know nothing about the game.
The game is basically all jump scares, and I've played a couple of like just the first level or whatever, you know, like Ryan showed me the games a year or two ago. I was like, what are these games? And if you play it in the dark with headphones on or, you know, loudspeakers, I mean, it's a kind of scary game. Like, stuff just jumps out at you constantly. It's freaky. It's a good atmosphere. This movie is so, and not even me trying, you know, I'm not trying to be like, oh, this isn't scary, I'm a tough guy thing. It's like, is there anything scary in this movie?
What's the premise of the game?
That you're in this abandoned showbiz pizza and you got to get out.
But it's scary.
And the only jump scares I can think of in the movie is when they keep cutting to that one puppet that shows up in the locker.
Which apparently is an Easter egg for the second game.
Okay.
But like in the game, it's not a bobblehead. In the game, it's like an actual scary looking, like maybe a large puppet or something, because I saw the picture of it. And in this movie, they try to make you act like a tiny bobblehead is scary. Like, they made the least scary looking thing try to be a jump scare. Like, this movie is so bad when it comes to trying to be scary or tension building or horror. And I don't understand why they didn't give more scares.
I honestly think is that they knew what their target audience was going to be, and maybe they just didn't want to make it as scary as they could have. I don't know.
It's just weird because the games are scary. Like, I would think the target audience would want the scares.
Yeah, I was surprised because Sydney, my stepdaughter, she loves horror movies, like real horror movies. Like, I mean, she's always coming like to me, like, can we buy this on Vudu? Can we buy that on Vudu?
Can you buy me Audition, please?
Yeah, I mean, she's been like, hey, can we get I Spit on Your Grave? And I was like,
oh my God.
I was like, hey, I'll get it for you, but like, it's going to be a bit much. This isn't Friday the 13th, right? Like, you know, and she's like, okay. And I'm like, I'm
that's the one movie. It's the second movie I had to turn off.
Yeah, I'm just like,
I gotta come back to this. This is too much.
I was just like, FY, especially because she's like, you know, very much a feminist. And I'm just like, this one might rub you the wrong way. I'm just letting you know.
She does win in the end, I guess.
There are two ways, two prisms through which to view it. Yes.
Correct.
And so, but I was just giving her head. So, like, she likes, like, real horror, right? And so I thought, I know she grew up with this game and loved it, but I just thought, I thought she might have been upset because I'm just watching this thing as much as I can stay awake for, and thinking, right? Like, there is nothing scary. I mean, I remember listening to her play the game and, like, screaming when something jumped out at her and stuff, and so I'm like, the crowd I saw it with, nobody made a noise the whole time. Like,
no,
not one.
Because serious, like, this is not me being like, oh, why is this kids movie not a super horror filled? Like, I'm not knocking it for it being PG-13. You can still make scary or jumps in a PG-13. But literally, I'm watching this thing and it is like, it's the equivalent of watching something like Paranormal Activity in the middle of the day out on your back porch where the sun is shining in. Like,
it's not
going to be scary if without the atmosphere. And this movie does such a bad job of setting a scary atmosphere that you never feel like anyone's really in danger. The stakes are high.
I do think that the setup of Freddy's, like the actual building, I think is creepy. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is, but like, I've always found the idea of like an arcade or any of that stuff, like, at night when everything's off.
Yeah.
Like, there is some level of, cause you can't see, you know, the arcade that was here in St. Louis when I was a kid was called Exilorama. Mm-hmm. And you walk in the front of that place and you really can't see anything. Like, you know, you've got like machines everywhere and there's all kinds of like nooks and crannies and everything is, you know, there could be anything around the corner cause everything's, so they just jam as much as they can into those places. So I do think the setup of that is creepy, but they don't do anything with it. They do one thing where the Maggie, that's right, is that the sister?
Sure.
No idea.
Oh, sure. The sister is like hiding behind a machine waiting for one of the animatronics to come
Abby
around the corner.
Abby is the sister.
Abby, okay. Waiting for one of the animatronics to come around the corner. And I was like, okay, like I can, you know, all you can really see is like the silhouette of the animatronic and the glowing of the eyes, and I was like, that's kind of creepy. There's a movie called Chopping Mall that this reminds me of, where it's a bunch of people stuck in a mall and they're like trying to fight off like the security machine.
But let me guess, it's really campy B movie
fun. It's super camp. Yes,
and that's the problem. You can't, this movie is like trying to be so serious
when they're not in the Freddy's. It's an art house movie. It's this weird,
very, very much
like
yes.
my childhood trauma, and I'm just like, where are his parents in all of this? Like the parents
also,
lost
what's
the kid.
The age gap between him and his sister. Like, when did this? When was this child born?
He's 30 right. something. Like, right?
And she's what? We'll say she's 8, 12, maybe 12.
He's born in 1992, so he's 32, 33, or whatever. Like.
Yeah, I was trying to give him the benefit of the doubt and be like, okay, let's say he's 25, right? Yeah. But she's supposed to be 6. It's still a 20-year difference. And this kid got lost. The brother
and
got
the
lost
parents
when
left
he
left or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm
well,
just like,
the mom died, and then he's like, and then dad couldn't take it, so then dad left. So it's like, when was this child born?
Okay. Right. I got to get into too. Okay. The plot line with the evil aunt is about one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen. So this guy, Mike, played by Josh Hutcherson, who, again, I really like him. I think he's a really good actor, and this is a crappy movie. But so Mike is taking care of his sister. Like you said, the mom died, the dad left. Taking care of his sister, right? And apparently He gets some kind of government assistance for take care of the sister. The aunt, who seems very well off, hires an evil lawyer, is very well to do.
Yeah, an evil lawyer, because Doug is my favorite character of this movie.
Well,
the lawyer is the hilarious.
It's a low bar, but he's yeah, good.
He's very
so
funny.
The aunt, who seems very well off, would like to adopt the niece to get a check, yet Mike doesn't have any money, and they're going to kick him out because he can't pay his rent. How much money is the government giving him that he can't even pay the rent?
Yeah, because there's one thing I know about the federal government is that when it comes to child care, they just give people too much money.
Yeah.
Right? But, like, it's just too much. It's just
too much.
It's bags too much. A cartoon, like they a just, Looney Tunes card, bags full of money. They just drop them off on your front porch.
They back a Brinks truck up to everybody's house.
It doesn't make any sense. The aunt that has plenty of money wants some amount of money that is not enough to pay the rent on the place you live. what is her motivation? It's horrible.
Yeah.
She doesn't love the kid. She, at one point, entertains the idea of killing Mike in order to get the sister back. She clearly doesn't care about these people, and she wants $600 a month. Like, it's such a stupid, and that's what I'm talking about when I say the writing of this movie. You know, if you're going to have fun with the script and if you're going to want to be zany about it, fine, make her an evil villain whose motivations are terrible, but it can't be in a movie that's about dealing with your trauma and trying to be so serious. Like,
it's a simple fix where you just say, where Mary Stuart Masterson, who plays the aunt, is like, look, you're not fit to raise this child.
Right.
She needs more structure.
Make her care about the kid. Yeah.
It's a simple thing.
It would be it's a very easy thing to fix. I also feel like the aunt gets the Brendan Fraser Award for what movie are you in? Because she is not in the same movie as the rest of these people.
She's trying to elevate this movie and, again, the material.
I think she gets what the movie's supposed to be. You know what I mean? Like, this is supposed to be silly's harsh, but like, it's supposed to be, oh, we're making a movie about a showbiz pizza that goes bat crazy. Okay, I get it, but nobody else is making that movie.
Right. I think they all had different ideas of what they were doing. So Matthew Lillard apparently showed up to film about 2 days on this movie.
Hey man, I gotta tell you, I think Matthew Lillard. I'm a big fan. I think that dude's a super underrated actor.
I like him, but I think he's horrible in this movie.
He's barely in it, so it's like,
I know,
I don't know that you can blame him.
I know, but I'm like, what are you doing? Which leads me to the point where I don't think this director could give any of these people notes or something. Like, I don't know the director, Emma Tammy, but she doesn't have a huge list of credits. But
is the writer of this movie the writer of The Game?
One of them.
One of the writers is, yeah.
There's three writers, and I think the thing is, like, The Game is a very simple premise. You're in a dark, scary security office, and stuff jumps out at you. So, like, yeah, you can write, I mean, you know, you can come up with some scary stuff, but trying to write this touching, heartfelt family drama, you know, exercise.
All that good
stuff. I don't think it worked, and it leads me right back again. I'm just going to keep preaching on Willy's Wonderland. You don't get all that baggage. You don't have to have a lot of dialogue, that's for sure.
Yeah,
so
dialogue, I don't think.
But, you know, you get this cool character who's kind of like a man with no name, as he's, you know, he's pulling that inspiration, and he's just kicking ass. And there's scares, and there's gore, and there's blood. You know, there's fun stuff going on. And this movie, which comes in at almost 2 hours long, which I thought...
That's crazy.
It is crazy.
Stunned when I looked and I saw that the runtime was 1 hour 52, I was like, for what?
For kids?
I watched this in two breaks. Like, I had to, I didn't finish it. I watched it on Peacock, which I think is another interesting tactic. I don't know. You know, they did this with Halloween Kills.
Yeah, they do it with bad movies that they know that.
But they make like crazy money. Oh, like you can say whatever you want about those last two Halloween movies. I don't disagree. I love them all the same. I understand that they're bad.
You don't love them all the same. Stop that.
I love the franchise.
Yeah, but you
so
don't
like
love
I'll
them
watch any
the
of
same.
Them.
You got
no,
I mean,
no, no,
no.
I don't
way.
Love them all, but I say that I enjoy watching those two.
But
I like
those,
you know,
Halloween movies were diminishing returns. Though that first one was so good, and I feel like they didn't tap into the potential. They could have made so much money.
That's true.
You know,
but this one did the same thing. Like, this one was day and date on Peacock and in theaters, and it still made.
It made $40 million on opening day. That's not nuts. A weekend total. That's a day total.
That was its projected weekend.
Yeah,
in one day.
Like I saw a headline that said it made $40 million opening day. So yeah, I'm sure it includes Thursday night previews. And I sent you guys screenshots when I was trying to go to like the 4:45 show, and I couldn't find three seats together.
Yeah,
and ended up having to go to the 7:30.
That's nuts.
So you saw this in the theater.
I saw it in the theater so I could review it on the radio, because otherwise I would have watched it on Peacock.
Yeah, what was that like? How was that crowd?
It was packed, but they were not loud. But exiting, people seemed to be talking about it positively, especially the kids, anyone under 20. But the theater like wasn't. I've seen other people saying that their theaters like the crowd was really into it and cheering, and my theater had none of that. It was dead silence the whole time.
Huh.
But
if you go see a movie like Willy's Wonderland, I guarantee people are cheering and yelling at the screen because there's kills. Like this movie,
it's a violent movie.
But the movie doesn't know what it wants to be, right? Do you want to be a zany, crazy movie that good kills and scares, or do you want to be this heartfelt family drama? And I get that they've accomplished fan service, so yes, people that play the game may enjoy it, but they can't break out outside of that. Like once this opening weekend goes crazy, I'm guessing these people, like the fans, watch it on Peacock at home after that, right? Like they're not going to the theater every week to see this.
My guess is the advantage of day and date here is that one, it doesn't seem like it hurt the box office at
no,
all.
No, not at all.
And two, now the kids might go home and be like, hey, Mom, sign up for Peacock so I can watch it again. You know?
That's true.
So I know, like, if when I was a kid, if I had gone to the theater and seen Back to the Future and then they're showing Back to the Future on HBO the next day, I'd be like, we need to get HBO, right? Now, this is no Back to the Future.
Oh, please. But. Yeah, I was about to say. My heart stopped for a second.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. But so it's interesting. Do you think that other studios, let's say Killers of a Flower, what's it? Killers of a Flower Moon.
Well, right? It is coming out on Apple eventually.
That's fair.
I think Killers of the Flower Moon is 30 days.
Do you think if they had done it like day and date, like, is that going to affect its box office?
Yes.
Maybe. Yeah.
Okay. I do. I think that there's right now it seems like you can get away with this on horror. And I think it's because horror works. Horror just doesn't work as good on watching it on your TV. It just
doesn't.
True.
That's
like,
very true.
There's something about being in that dark room, it's the only thing that you can focus on, having if there's a crowd, being surrounded by people that are also having that moment, it's like it just doesn't play the same way. Like, I think Killers of the Flower Moon, if they did day and date, I think they would have gutted the box office is for no other reason than people are like 3.5 hours. I want to be able to pause that thing.
Yeah. That's fair. That's fair.
So, did you see that's a good point. Did you see that some theaters are getting in trouble because they were inserting an intermission in the Killers of the Flower Moon?
Wow.
Not all heroes wear capes, right? Like, that's I don't give a shit what you think, Scorsese. Once you tip over 3:15, you need to put a pee break. You're an 80-year-old man. I shouldn't have to tell you that.
Especially, with who his demographic probably is at this point.
Yeah.
Like, it's probably an older crowd. You know,
Tom wishes he flew to North Carolina or wherever was doing that.
I know, right? I'd have thought about it.
Worth it.
So this movie is it's a very weird movie. It opens with we've basically Josh Hutcherson is at a his younger self is at a barbecue, and his mom and dad kind of tell him to keep an eye on his brother, and he does a really bad job of it, and his brother ends up getting taken. Like, we see the brother in the back seat of a car as this car is driving away, and that has affected Josh Hutcherson throughout his entire life. Like, he is messed up. He's taking, you're not really sure what's going on. He's got like a poster of Nebraska on his ceiling. He's taking sleeping meds to go to sleep, but he's also got this girl who initially I thought was his daughter,
Same.
Don't know why they went with the sister part. Like, that's a very weird. Maybe it's because he was so not nice to this girl. Like, I feel like if it was his daughter, that, like, it.
It feels more it feels, cruel.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So I feel like maybe if they, since they made it his sister.
He was forced into fatherhood, right? Like,
correct.
He didn't make a choice to be a father or even make him a mistake and shoot one past the goalie and you need to man up and
yeah,
do the thing. But, like, it's like he was basically bequeathed a child and, like, what's he supposed to do?
Correct. Which I do think, I'm like, okay, that makes sense. Because you do kind of want to root for him, but you also don't root for him at all.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he's
kind of unlikable.
I think he's very sympathetic. Like, this whole part about his background and the guilt he feels, I think is interesting. I think in a different movie, or maybe in a movie that was actually interesting or exciting or had good kills, all that could have been good. You would be traumatized if you felt like you were responsible for your brother getting kidnapped and possibly
sure.
killed, and your parents blamed you, and then they break up over it. You'd be messed up, and I think him losing
but
his
they didn't,
job.
Okay, but the, okay. It, in all fairness, they didn't break up. Like, the mom and dad stayed together and had another baby, and then the mom dies, and the dad's like, deuces, and then leaves.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that I'm sure there was some kind of a rift there where he, you know, if the dad would have stuck around if they had a good relationship, my guess is the dad blamed him for losing the brother
and he
left because he couldn't look at him. Like, I'm just thinking that there's probably a reason why Hutcherson's character blames himself, and he'd be messed up. And if you were a security guard and you were at a mall and you thought a guy was kidnapping a kid, you'd freak out because of your trauma. Like, there's a really interesting character development going on here. And
give me Five Nights at Freddy's by A24 and see what happens.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is
Blumhouse. It's almost like what
it
they
it's yeah okay
it's almost also, like what they were trying to do. Like, it was so
it's yeah, exactly what they were trying to
it
do.
It was like, so weird. Like, whenever, like I said, whenever it left Freddy's, I'm like, it gets into this weird art house movie zone. And I'm like, that's not, nobody wants that. I wanted to sneak in on Peacock just to look at it. My showing, like, those scenes at Freddy's were so dark, it was impossible to tell what was going on. Was that the theater trying to save money on a light bulb, or was it actually
they
shot
were
that well?
I think it was. I mean, I did not have any problems with it.
I think the movie wasn't shot very well, but my TV brightness was up decently. I didn't have problems seeing it.
Yeah, I didn't.
Okay, I was just curious.
Yeah,
but also your theater may have been a light bulb short.
It could have been for sure. But yeah, the look of the movie wasn't that great. I mean, from a technical perspective, I don't think there's anything that interesting. Like Joe was saying, I think that the scenic design was fine. I think the Freddy Fazbear's looked good. It was creepy looking.
The puppetry was great. The puppetry
that
looks
was another
like
big...
I never cared for the designs of Freddy's. I thought that the art always to me looked substandard, but
sure.
I will also say that the puppetry I felt recreated the look of Freddy. So if you like the look of that game, like they did not stray from the character design. I thought they did a good job.
That was actually one of the things I was most impressed about. Is I was like, oh, like they actually got people to make these costumes and to put people inside of them, literally and figuratively. I will say the one thing that I thought was going to happen is that his brother was going to be in one of those suits.
Yeah,
that's where I thought we were. Where I thought we were going.
In a better script, it would have tied in. But I mean, there was a slight tie in, but it was just like, oh, and by the way, I killed him. But okay, cool.
Like, yeah, see you, bye.
Like there was no like, and I turned him into a puppet. Like there, it was they like they really thought they were doing something at the end again. Where, you know, first of all,
with the reveal of like who's in the suits.
Yeah,
or?
First of all, you don't really hire Matthew Lillard just to play a random
career
counselor. So if he's never going to show up again in the entire movie, that would really make no sense. And then you start getting the daughter and my father, and you never see who the father is. And it's just like, I don't know. Again, maybe it was surprising for some people, but I think they.
Well, okay. So initially, I thought. So yeah, the reveal is that there's this police officer that keeps showing up night after night. Two Freddies talking, you know, kind of has this pseudo romantic relationship with Josh Hutcherson. Do you know who this gal is? I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't figure out why I knew who this gal was.
No idea.
Tell us.
She was the main character from Countdown.
What's that?
That was the one with the app on the phone that would like kill you.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
We did an episode on it. You were on the episode.
I don't think so.
Pretty sure. Either way. But she was the main character of that. And I was like, oh, okay, good for her. Getting a little... That movie's a lot of fun.
Well, she was...
Again,
she was Anna in Once Upon a Time. That's where I saw her from.
Isn't she the main character in... What's that serial killer show that got picked up by... It was on Lifetime, got picked up by Netflix?
Oh, yeah.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's in You. That's where she's back. And that is, like... I kept looking at her, too. Like, where do I know her from? That's what it is. Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, the reveal is that her dad is the was the owner of Freddy's, and he's this... prolific child murderer, I guess. And you know, she can't stop her, you know, she's too scared, she can't stop her dad.
But why does the sister see ghosts?
I don't know.
Like, what are they exactly?
Well, does she see ghosts, or does she see just the animatronics and who they are, like,
she's,
on the inside?
No, she's talking to ghosts the entire... It's her friends or all the ghosts of the kids that got trapped and turned into animatronics. Like, those are those kids that, oh, like, they have The Shining, I guess. I don't, like...
Shh, you want to get sued?
The Shining, sorry.
Yeah.
But, I don't understand, again, what they were trying to do. Like, they were trying to really go for something where they just didn't have to. They could have just
movie. You know what I think? I think this was a different script.
Yeah.
And they added the Five Nights and Freddy's to it. I think there. Something tells me that this was a the trauma and the sister and the mom and this aunt trying to get the sister.
That's possible.
It feels like that is a completely different movie.
Yeah.
And then they were like, "Hey, we've got this script we've been trying to get off the ground. What if we just add the Freddy stuff?"
I could see that one of the writers already was kicking around this script, and they were like, "We're going to take this, and we're going to copy paste the arcade and the Freddy's," because it really feels so disjointed, and trying to connect it all just seems ridiculous and in a bad way. Like you know what I would have done if Willy's Wonderland came out and it kicked so much ass? I would have said, "Guess who we're getting to direct Five Nights at Freddy's?" Like, you had the director,
you know, Jason Blum, when Willy's Wonderland came out, was like, "Son of a bitch."
I mean, I guess it didn't matter, but like, all he had to do was go get them, like, that they made their, what do you call it, like, your reel. They made their application to direct this movie. Like, I don't understand why you would not go, "That's who we get," because it was so much better.
My guess is they were mad because it ripped them off. You know what I mean?
Right. You could go one of two ways. You could be mad, or you could go, "Damn, they did it! Like, they let's get them," you know.
I wonder if the existence of that movie is part of why we got what we did, right? Like, they were like, "Well, they already kind of did all the low hanging fruit. We have to come at it from a different direction."
Yeah,
that could be.
You're possible. They beat them to the punch at their own game, so it's like, yeah, they could have really tried to outfit it with way more than they needed to, but to separate them.
Yeah. So, like Kevin said, that Josh Hutcherson is a security guard at a local mall, which I also think is hilarious because malls are dying. And he sees a guy he sees a kid who's kind of like looking around and he's lost. And he sees a guy kind of walk up and grab this kid by the arm and pull him away. Is the gal behind the counter at the ice cream shop the same gal that's the babysitter?
I couldn't tell. She, you know, now that you say that, I think maybe she was.
I don't know.
Okay.
No, I don't
think
so.
No.
No, I don't think so, because the ice cream shop girl was like thinner and like
shorter,
chirpier, you know.
That's what I thought too.
So it's just another character that never pays off or goes anywhere. Got it. Okay.
None whatsoever.
Okay. So,
but it's also, it is weird
where he found that friend who babysits was a connection because he knew her from the mall would make sense. So the script didn't do it. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Cool. It is weird that throughout this entire movie, Josh Hutcherson does have these three women who are kind of like pining after him, and he's a loser. Like, he can't, you know, he also, let me ask this. Kevin, when you go to bed, do you sleep with a shirt on?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. Oh, then I'm the weirdo.
That would bug the crap out of me.
Oh, I think a shirt would bug the crap out of me.
But what does that have to do with it?
I mean,
what was your point there?
It's one of these things that, like, anytime I see a movie and I see a guy sleeping in bed and he wakes up, he's got a shirt on, I was like, how do you do that?
Oh.
Like, what psychopath wears a shirt to bed?
Well, Joe,
apparently I'm the psychopath.
I think you're the monster.
Yeah.
I mean, look at me. I wear a shirt.
Anything.
Look at me. I wear a shirt to swim.
but okay. But see, here's the thing. Again, like, I'm not going to give his character any crap. I'm not going to call him a loser because he can't pick up girls or whatever. Like, the way this
I know.
He is right to be messed up, and that's the most interesting thing about this movie. If it would actually pay off in any meaningful way, is he is messed up and he carries this guilt. Like, I like art house movies, and I like exploring characters like that, but in a different movie. And so it's a shame that he couldn't get a chance, because I feel like he is really acting. His performance in this movie, like you said, all these
characters, he thinks he's in an A24
movie. These different characters think they're all in different movies. So, like,
yeah,
some of them, like the ants being wacky, and he's sitting there giving this performance where I'm like, wow, he's going for it. And it feels
I'm
so
telling you, that lawyer and his facial expressions.
Well, he's in a totally different movie. He's in an Abbott and Costello movie or something.
Yeah,
he's like an earnest movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, now that would be something.
You know I'm right. You know I'm right. But man, that scene at the diner when the ant's talking to the three like hooligans.
Yeah.
And I
believe they're ne'er-do-wells.
Oh, correct. Yeah. Sorry, ne'er-do-wells.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And the waiter is the YouTuber MatPat.
So apparently so is the taxi driver.
That's Corey Kenshin. He's a big he plays horror games. I know these people through Ryan, because he watches all these YouTubers. He loves Corey Kenshin. He's big with the horror video games.
But both of those guys were big proponents of the game early on, right?
Right. They stream the game and talk about it and everything.
And apparently are there all kinds of like theories about the game? Like, is
sure.
that what I...
Yeah, I don't... mean, but there's it's a huge lore, and that's the other thing, is this movie is so bogged down by lore and those Easter eggs, because it all has to do with the lore, that they fit it in there. And again, for the fan service, like, the fans enjoy it, and that's great, but you're never going to get outside that bubble where, look at Barbie, like, people are going to see that movie that don't care about Barbie lore and maybe
right.
didn't play with Barbies. I'm sure a lot of them didn't play with Barbies, but it made $1 billion.
I did not play with Barbies. You're
see?
I also did not play
and
with
so
Barbies.
And so it made $1 billion. Why? People that played with Barbies, right? They saw, oh my gosh, there's Malibu Barbie, there's Dr. Barbie. They picked up
pregnant
on it.
Pregnant Barbie.
But I think you also got to say, though, that like, a movie that makes $1 billion is lightning in a bottle. You can't really plan.
Especially in 2023.
You can't really plan for that. You can plan for what they did, which is make an $8 million movie and super serve the diehards and then count your money. Like, they're...
You
can't argue with the success of it, yeah.
No. I'm just saying that you're never going to... It is lightning in a bottle, but you can't even hope to capture anything by chance if you don't make a movie that will appeal to more than just people looking for lore.
You're not wrong, but it's also a very risky road to go down is my point, because there's a version of events where Barbie comes out and everybody looks at it and says, what the holy hell were you thinking? And it makes $15 million. Like, that, like, Barbie was great, but, like, it's... Barbie is like Johnny Depp's performance in Pirates of the Caribbean, right?
Yeah.
Until America embraces it, you got to be sitting in a room watching that going, holy shit, did we just flush our careers down the toilet?
What have we done?
Yeah. I mean, it was a big swing. And if she had whiffed, she being Greta Gerwig, if she had whiffed, like, everyone, it would be... that movie would be a punchline. So it's one of those things where when you take a big swing like that, there's also absolutely no middle ground.
Yeah.
Right. And that's when I don't think took a big enough swing.
No, this movie is all middle ground.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all middle ground.
And I just, it's, I do agree that you, I think when you're making a property like this into a movie, you do need to put in some Easter eggs for the people,
of course,
who have, you know, it's almost like a superhero movie. Like,
it's exactly like a superhero movie. And like, I like my complaint, and I think most critics or adults' complaints, people who don't come to the franchise with knowledge of it, isn't that they put in Easter eggs. It's that it is a basket of Easter. It's an Easter basket, right?
Yeah.
It's nothing but Easter eggs, and everything that isn't an Easter egg. The only thing interesting about the movie is Easter eggs. And so if you're not there for that, you're sitting there wondering, like, what the hell is this really about? Like,
yeah, I think, you know, like, I'll take Spider-Man, for example, since the Spider-Man 2 has come out and it has been this massive video game. It's huge. In a Spider-Man movie, if Peter Parker is at the Daily Bugle and he walks by a desk, and on the desk, you know, you see a nameplate for Eddie Brock, right? Like, that's an Easter egg that maybe people, well, Venom at this point is pretty,
yeah,
that was a bad example.
10 years ago, 20 years ago, yeah.
That's an Easter egg for the fans, and it means nothing to anybody else, but it's just like a thing that you, mm-hmm. you know, it's not focused on.
Yeah.
Where I feel like with the YouTubers, which I don't know if that's an Easter egg as much as it's just like giving a little bit of respect to the people that were part of this thing before.
I think
it
it's from,
a thing.
Oh, that's a promotional thing. We've talked about this
yeah.
before.
Oh, that's exactly what it is.
And now
yeah.
all the YouTubers with 50 million followers go, I'm in the new Five Nights at Freddy's
movie. Well,
that's,
movie. You know, yeah. in yeah. Scream, was it Scream 5? Were they with Jack, what's his name? Jack Quaid?
Yeah.
Right?
Five
the,
Cream, yeah.
Five Cream, yeah. The people who are on, that he's, you know, he's in that one scene, he's watching two people like tear apart the new Scream or the new Stab movie. Yeah. Those two people, it's Dead Meat
yeah.
is a YouTube channel. And both of those, like James and Chelsea, like they have a podcast, they have their own YouTube channel, and they got put into the movie as Dead Meat, I yeah. think.
It's smart.
So like it's the same, but I think they're friends with
that's
Radio
not
Sun,
new.
But
I think, is it the Faculty that Harry Knowles oh. from Ain't It Cool News pops up in? I mean,
man,
they've been doing
a
this.
Name I haven't heard in forever.
Yeah, they've been doing this for a long, long time.
Yeah,
I forgot about Harry Knowles. What a piece of shit that guy is.
So yeah,
that,
so
remember when Ain't It Cool News was like the place to sure. go?
That was, they had the world by the balls
they
for about
absolutely
18 months.
Did.
Yeah,
that's. I think a bunch of those guys. I think. A few of those guys also now do podcasts. The King Cast. I think one of those guys was a Ain't It Cool News guy.
Gotcha. They, I mean, they all do. Like Quint was the other one that
yeah.
still does.
Oh, man. I read a lot of stuff from Quint yeah. all
so,
the time.
So, yeah. So he loses his job at the mall, and he ends up having to take this job at the behest of not Freddy's
not
owner.
Not creepy
Matthew
guy.
Willard, and who's just doing something that I think the writing is so bad, but like, I'm like, I love Matthew Lillard. What are you doing here? I think it's so bad.
Can I tell you that I think if they cast Perry White in the new Superman movie, Matthew Lillard would make a really fun Perry White. He's old enough that I think the age gap between him and David Cornsweet would work, but he also kind of, he just has like an earnestness to him, even in this, even as I'm watching, I was like, oh yeah, Matthew Lillard, like, how you doing? Good for you. You should be Scooby. You should be Shaggy all the time. It's not fair that they gave that to somebody else.
It is
but
not.
I,
it
like,
is
there's
a
something
crime that he's
it
not.
Is.
Yeah. Still Shaggy. Yeah.
Yes.
But I think he would make a really fun Perry White.
But so the whole thing is that, so he has to take this job because he's about to get evicted. The aunt wants the $200 a month in the government assistance or whatever. So
pre-tax.
So
pre-tax.
So she's trying to hire people to mess up his job. Eventually the babysitter is like, yeah, there's no, I don't have any dirt to give you, because she's working with the aunt and her lawyer and everything. And she's like, but he says he has to keep this job or else he won't be able to, you know, look good enough for the courts. And so her brother or something, whoever the other ne'er-do-well
these other,
is.
The other two guys.
He's like, we'll go trash the place and then he will get fired from his job.
But also, they trash it during the day when he's not there.
Right. Like, well, because
trash it at night.
Well, the argument there is that he left a door
he didn't
unlocked.
Lock it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
But I agree. I was like, why would you go trash?
It's not his yeah. responsibility to trash
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I clocked out, bitch.
Day.
That ain't my problem.
Yeah. That's not me.
So
don't you put that on me.
So he basically is taking these sleeping pills. He's falling asleep. He can't. The reason why he can't keep this job now basically is that he is trying to track down, like, again, with his like shining powers that he has. He calls it like the dream recollection or something. To
well,
where,
I yeah, we keep
take,
seeing the book.
I didn't take the sleeping pills as he couldn't fall asleep. It's like he was trying to make himself fall into a super deep sleep. Because yeah. he's trying to have a
right.
lucid dream so he can explore what happened the
for
day
sure.
his brother was abducted.
I If I said he couldn't, then I misspoke. I didn't mean to say that. I said he couldn't do his job because he keeps falling asleep.
Sure. Yeah.
He's taking these sleeping pills, and he wants to explore based on this book they show you that you've seen everything and you have everything deep down in your memories. And if you tap into it in the dream world, you can get the details. So he's trying to find the brother's killer, and he wants to solve the mystery and or at least track down the person that took his brother. And while that is happening, you know, he's kind of ignoring his job, but nothing really happens the first night. Well, they break in, and then this cop
or the second
friends.
Night or the third night.
Yeah, right. but so this cop in the meantime, like after the second day on the job, I guess, because I'm assuming this takes place over 5 days. I didn't count, but I'm guessing that's kind of the deal.
It's pretty close.
Like,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I really thought we would have gotten some sort of count, like night one.
Right.
It's a time card.
Right. So, but anyway, right. I'm guessing there were five. But so the cop tells him, he's like, hey, you left the place unlocked. You can't be doing this. So those people that broke in, this is the only kind of, I won't say kind of violent, but like this is the only craziness that happens is there's three of them. There's the girl that babysits, her brother, friend, whoever, and this other random dude. And they all break in, and you see the animatronics like in shadows killing them. And, you know, they don't show but
every kill is done off screen.
There's
every single one.
Blood splatter on a window, you know, that comes up. And so
that cupcake eats that guy's face.
Yeah. You see kind of the aftermath, which I think was the most violent part, was later on he stumbles upon the bodies and you see the guy's face all gnarly and you're like, oh, crap. But yeah, so these guys die. But then, like, is the daughter cleaning up after them? Because, like,
I think the daughter. Oh, wait, the cop daughter?
Yeah, so, like, spoilers, or if Joe mentioned, she's the daughter. But,
yeah.
Like, she says this place got broken into, but she never mentions the dead bodies or anything. So I wasn't
sure. I think the animatronics hide the dead bodies.
Oh, I thought maybe she was cleaning up and putting the dead bodies in that room so that.
No, I think the animatronics did that.
Okay.
That's what I thought. I mean, your theory is also legit.
Here's the question. If the animatronics can kill people and then clean up after themselves, what exactly do you need a security guard for?
Nothing.
if that's nothing. True, right? Like, yeah, I don't really get that part of it either. So now she's like, you better keep this place together. And he's like, let me tell you why I messed up. So they go have this touching moment by the creek as he's throwing stones and saying.
Also, what is her shift? Like, if she's working overnight, which is fine. I get it. That's what I do. But then when she comes to the house, it's like it's daytime and she's still in full uniform.
Well, I just thought she just got off work how I took it.
I guess, but that I thought it was weird.
Joe and also, when I get in my car, I take the clothes off.
That uniform is off.
Driving also, around in my underwear.
That's right.
And no shirt.
Joe doesn't wear a shirt. I'm wearing a shirt right now.
In today's world, if I was a police officer, I'd be taking my uniform off the second I clocked out, too. I'm not ordering fast food. You know how much spit you must eat?
Hell no.
No, thank you.
Hey, does it look like spit to you? Yeah.
But she's like.
But no, I will say there's another scene. Like, I was looking at her belt.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, your stuff is all wrong. Like, her firearm at one point was like in the front of her belt, and I was like,
that's
on the opposite.
Cool, Joe, so she can, you know.
But it was also I'm almost positive it was facing the wrong way, so she would have had to have like cross like the taser is supposed to be that way.
She likes to do the cool action thing.
But I was like, come on. It's at this point I was like, oh, I don't like this movie. Like, I am doubling down on the placement of her, like.
This is kind of movie that gets you looking at the placement of her belt.
Yeah, of like the items on her belt.
But so she kind of becomes sympathetic. He says the thing about the brother. And she's like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. And they never like make out.
But you realize that she realizes that her dad did it, right? Like, she knows in that moment that her dad is the one that killed his brother.
Well, that's why I also don't really think you can be that sympathetic to this cop character, if you ever could, because she's enabling her father, who's a child murderer. If she knows about this stuff, she's not a good person. What is she doing?
No, I don't know. And the way that the actress plays it is like she's like, oh, it's okay, like I understand, and she's sympathetic to him, but it is kind of like Rose Byrne in Insidious 5, where it's like, hey,
You just can't let
you're
that.
You're part of the problem.
You can't let that die.
No,
man.
Because that's she is part of the problem.
I like this actress. Elizabeth Lail is her name. Yeah. I like her a lot. I think she gives a good performance for what she's given, just like Josh Hutcherson does. I think she's very charismatic. I like her a lot. But the character, again, like, I don't know how much you can be on board with her covering up or at least being aware. She's a cop. Like, her dad's a child murderer. She needs to put him in jail or stop this many years.
Or she became a cop to protect her dad, which is even worse.
Right. That's no matter how you cut this, she's aware of what goes on at this place, and she's a cop. So what are you trying to say with this movie? I don't understand the message of
all
that
cops
character.
Are bastards. That's the message of the movie.
Now, God damn it.
But anyway, I just thought it was weird. I don't understand it. I don't know why you would really like her. I mean, yeah, it's kind of like we talked about last week, a little different, but it's like, just because you do the right thing at the end, like, I know you want character growth, but that doesn't excuse what you've done. Like, that's why I think...
That's an interesting... So in Freddy versus Jason, I'll use that as an example, you're rooting for Jason in that movie, but you also
but
have...
all the people he's killing bad?
I mean, it's Freddy.
Oh, just
you know what I mean?
Freddy,
like,
yeah.
he does kill a bunch of, like, kids,
right?
But you know, but he is fighting Freddy at the end, and so I guess.
But those
you're
movies,
rooting for Jason.
But yeah, but if you're rooting for, like, monster versus monster, that's a little bit different.
Those are cartoons.
I know. Yes, very much so. I just thought it was funny. I was like, now wait, we are kind of rooting for the mass, you know, murderer to kill the other mass murderer, but I guess that's fair.
So essentially, at this point, since all the babysitter girl is gone, Mike is forced to bring his sister to work, which is not a safe place, and the cop says stay away from here and everything, but he has to because he can't leave her. I guess it's better to bring her to creepy place than leave her at home alone. So, like, they don't ever really explain why she couldn't just stay home
because, like, she's like six.
I don't know. I mean, she seemed pretty, like, she kind of keeps to herself anyway. Like, the babysitter's there downstairs, and she's upstairs coloring. Like, it's not like she required nonstop supervision.
I would not leave my six-year-old.
I would not leave a six-year-old.
Overnight.
Yeah.
I know, but he's bringing her to this crazy, like, place where people are breaking in and stuff. I don't know. I just...
Hey, man, sometimes as a single parent, sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. Like, oh, a sleepy bag, throw in a corner. There's nobody else there. It's better than leaving her home alone until figure out a better situation. Like, that's not a crazy place to land.
Yeah.
So we'll just try to wrap this up as fast
Please.
As we can. The sister does is draw, and Mike finds out that what she's been drawing, she's drawn these four kids, and these kids have similar characteristics to the animatronics of Freddy's, and that's where we get the revelation that the kids' souls, I guess, are inside the animatronics.
And I believe there's five kids, which I didn't really understand, unless one was supposed to be that little one that was broken. But when he sees the dreams and everything, there's five kids.
Oh, so initially I thought the blonde kid was going to be the cop, that she was the one that got away. Mm. And that's why, but
interesting.
That's what did
but happen. Yeah, I didn't really ever get the correlation between the five kids, four animatronics, the fifth suit ends up being the killer, so that isn't it. But maybe that baby, the little one, right, that he almost gets his finger cut off in?
Yeah.
Might have been maybe one of them at some point.
Maybe one of them is the cupcake.
Yeah, no, you're right. Maybe.
Oh, that's true.
So, yeah.
That's fair.
But if you look at them in the dream, they also have the characteristics, like the one has a top hat on, one has ears.
One has like a hook or whatever.
One is always eating a cupcake. There you go,
always eating a cupcake.
I heard the same story, except instead of a hand, he had a hook for a foot.
Oh, that's what?
It's from Meatballs.
Oh, that's pretty good. That's a good reference. So they go there, and then they're gonna try to. I don't know what they're. Either way, the big reveal is that the big bad guy is this giant yellow bunny rabbit, and we get the reveal that inside the bunny rabbit suit is I always call him Seth MacFarlane. I totally drew a blank on his name.
Matthew Lillard.
Oh. Wow, that was rough.
Do you think Matthew Lillard is like, I'm the killer again?
Yeah, right. Maybe they'll bring me back for the sequel this time? Oh, right. If you're not? Okay. Well, I guess they could. the way this movie ends, I guess it's possible.
I got to think that's him refusing to come back.
Oh, sure. He's like, you get me for one. Oh, you mean Scream?
Yeah, for Scream. Like, you know, because it's like they've brought back everybody. They could easily bring him back. I feel like if he wanted to.
He was supposed to come back for 3.
Yeah, that he
and they
could.
And they had to rewrite it. Yeah. Because of Columbine.
Yeah, that's the tough thing with that movie, though, too, is that if you dive deep into the lore, like, they've, like, the writer has gone on record as saying, like, that was just an Easter egg in the second one or whatever. He's not really alive, and apparently he's officially dead. So, like, I know they can do whatever, but, like, a TV fell on his face and shocked him or whatever. Like, he's.
Yeah. I don't know. He'll be back. So, yeah, so the big reveal is that Matthew Lillard is the one inside this, and he's this child murderer. And the only way to beat him, I guess, is to turn the other animatronics on him. So the sister runs over and draws a picture of the bunny rabbit killing the kids. It puts it on this giant picture wall, and then all of the animatronics realize what has happened. So they turn on Matthew Lillard. They open up his suit and like push the pieces into his body, which I thought was kind of a cool little body horror thing where he's got like these.
I thought
like,
they
metal
shoved
strips.
A cupcake in there and it ate him from the inside or something.
I don't think so. I thought that they took like the pieces of the because he's got like these rib or like side like metal pieces that keep him in place inside the suit, and those metal pieces like start digging in like. Cutting into him, and I was like, okay, like at least we're gonna wait until the last 10 minutes of this movie to
Mr.
get a little
Cupcake
bit of horror.
Bites off a part of the suit, triggering its internal spring lock mechanisms and fatally wounding him. So
there it is.
We were both right.
Yes, we were both right. And then of course the animatronics drag Matthew Lillard off, and everybody gets out alive. Oh, which is Matthew Lillard stabs his own daughter in the gut.
Yeah, right. No, so and she's then, like.
Also, that was insane. So they get the daughter, they get the cop out of there. The daughter, everybody's back to normal. They're but this daughter is in a coma in the hospital.
But what you didn't mention was that when right before they turn on Matthew Lillard, they're like, they know what you did. Now you're telling me right now that these animatronics didn't have any idea what this guy was doing.
Didn't know that this guy murdered their bodies.
Yeah, like these are the ghosts and they're ghost kids running around. Like I don't really get the turn at the end. It's supposed to be like they know now and they all turn on.
Now
like,
they know.
They're dumb. What?
Yeah. But like you spend an entire movie with this character, the daughter slash cop.
Yeah.
And at the very end, you leave her in a coma, just laying there. Like, there's no resolution to her character whatsoever.
Because they're
like, is that them saying
they're setting up for a sequel,
or are they saying that like she just got her comeuppance?
No, because I don't think so.
I don't know.
I think it's depending on how much money this movie makes. Do they get Josh Hutcherson back? If they don't, do you bring her back? If she won't come back, is she dead? Like, I think they're
do they Devin Sawa it from Final Destination 2? They're like, look, we can't get him. We're going to kill him off screen.
Yeah, they're setting it up to like they've got all their little things planted that they can. Yeah,
yeah. I appreciate that this was not this. They geared this movie to who they knew would want to go see it. I think it's a bad idea to kind of limit your audience, but I don't want to yuck on anybody's yum. So if people out there enjoyed it, good for you. It's not a good movie.
Yeah, no, I think what Tom said in the beginning is 100% accurate. It's if you're a fan of Five Nights at Freddy, this movie has all the stuff you're looking for. If you're not, this movie has nothing you're looking for.
There's nothing you're looking for.
That's it. It's a movie made for the fans exclusively, and it's going to be, I think, extremely front-loaded. This movie just has no reason to keep making huge box offices. I mean, everyone saw it already.
Yeah, now they can see it for free.
Yeah, now it's on Peacock.
Yeah.
This was boring. I have been that bored of a movie in a while. So
yeah, watch Willy's Wonderland. That's the video recovery.
Yeah, down into the salt mines. Kevin pulled out Willy's Wonderland.
So anyway, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the virtual table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21, also on Letterboxd at the same.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett and subscribe to Circle of Wizards wherever you find podcasts.
And this is Tom. You can find me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online at facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. Don't forget our YouTube channel and, of course, our Patreon. So that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Cat tears up Tim's check.
Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice because we already warned you.